This is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, No Quit in Him, the story behind Dr. E. Brooks Wilkins' relentless pursuit to fight a local hospital, despite losing millions of dollars and his day in court. And that article's on the front page. The cover story article begins inside with a second headline. Dr. E. Brooks Wilkins estimates his fight against WakeMed to protect his business has cost more than $2 million, but he wants to keep on fighting. Then in bold black lettering, Dr. Stubborn. And under that, there's a large picture of Dr. Wilkins. And this story is written by Jason DeBrun. Christmas morning is usually for gift-giving, a late breakfast, and kicking back. Members of the family of Dr. E. Brooks Wilkins weren't so lucky this past year. The doctor and his two sons continued a pursuit that already had cost them hundreds of hours in terms of research, trying to find a smoking gun to prove their suspicion. A group of doctors now affiliated with WakeMed Health and Hospitals had conspired to leave the E. Brooks Wilkins family medicine practice and take the practice's patients with them. They claim the alleged pilfering had the potential of compromising patient health records. Wilkins filed a lawsuit in December 2012 against WakeMed in Wake County Superior Court, claiming a violation of federal patient privacy laws, and the deadline for him to present discovery was at the end of December last year. He didn't have the money for a high-priced legal team, so the work largely fell to him and his sons, who pored over thousands of pages of documents in search of a link between the patients who were allegedly lured into the new WakeMed practice by doctors who left. The evidence they took to court did not convince Superior Court Judge Michael J. Ofagluda. Since then, Wilkins claims he has come across more information that he says lends proof to his case. But on appeal, he has not been able to convince the courts to overturn the initial decision and even faces penalties to cover costs WakeMed incurred. The legal dispute. What is not in dispute is that some doctors left the Wilkins practice. They did form Falls Point, and it is affiliated with WakeMed. In a time of healthcare consolidation, doctors affiliating with larger health systems happens with increasing regularity. However, Wilkins claims these doctors began an aggressive marketing campaign to solicit patients from his practice to switch to Falls Point. While it's sound strategy to market a new business, be it a medical practice or a shoe store, Wilkins in his lawsuit alleges that the doctors who left were able to conduct direct marketing to former patients of Wilkins's practice after having lifted personal information from their patient records. Wilkins characterizes his fight as a David versus Goliath showdown. So far, Goliath is winning. The courts have found no merit to Wilkins' claims and dismissed his appeal. He has appealed that dismissal, though a court will likely not rule on it for several months. Already, Wilkins' practice has paid $60,000 in fees related to the case. Overall, he estimates the affair has cost his practice around $2 million. A third-party review confirms this estimate. The court dismissed all legal claims by Dr. Wilkins' practice against WakeMed and all other defendants, and the court ordered the practice to reimburse certain expenses incurred by WakeMed and other defendants, says WakeMed's Deb Lowry. The initial appeal filed by the Wilkins practice was dismissed. However, the practice recently appealed certain rulings by the court. Since this appeal remains pending, WakeMed cannot comment further on the case. Approach to practice. Many other businessmen would have cut their losses and moved on. In fact, members of Wilkins' family have, at times, suggested to simply put the episode behind them. Wilkins takes such a suggestion in stride. I'm sure the opposition will try to paint me as a greedy old curmudgeon. I might be an old curmudgeon, but I'm not greedy, he says. I'm not a greedy old curmudgeon, I'm just stubborn. Those in the Triangle's healthcare industry speak highly of Wilkins' medical practice and abilities, even if they question some of his tactics from a business standpoint. He has often tried to be on the cutting edge of new ideas. For example, his was among the first practices in the state to adopt a concierge model in which patients pay $1,500 per year in addition to the regular fees for service, but can expect additional attention. However, practices that go this route typically transform their whole practice to the concierge model, or at least spin off that portion. Instead, Wilkins tried to blend the traditional primary care and concierge care models under one roof, something that he says may have contributed to the rift between him and the doctors that ultimately left. Another of his ideas was the creation of ILWM Wellness, a company that promotes wellness and well-being to companies and their employees. That business is still around but is languishing, registering less than 10% of the practice's revenue. Still, he gains praise as a leading-edge thinker. Dr. Wilkins has been very innovative in his approach to health and wellness, expanding many of the services that are offered in traditional healthcare settings, says Greg Griggs, president of the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians. He has been a vocal leader in looking at obesity prevention in a different way, utilizing teams to assist with an enhanced emphasis on lifestyle management. Wilkins, the man. Wilkins grew up the youngest of seven children in a two-bedroom house off of Sheffield Road near Enloe High School in East Raleigh. He slept in his parents' room until they kicked him out to share the couch with his brother. The girl shared the second bedroom. His mother worked at what was then a car drugstore in Cameron Village, while his father was a welder at Aeroglide. He attended NC State University and worked with his father during summers, earning him the nickname College Boy. He also worked in a textile mill. "All those jobs made me study harder," he says. "I knew I didn't want to do that the rest of my life." He graduated with a degree in zoology and considered becoming a veterinarian. Instead, he enrolled in the UNC Chapel Hill School of Medicine, largely because at the time it was cheaper to pursue a medical degree from UNC, an in-state school, than going to Georgia or elsewhere to attend veterinary school. At that time, NCSU did not have a vet school. While at Chapel Hill, he met Darlene Whitaker. They married and had two sons and two daughters. Like many physician practices in the 1990s, the Wilkins family practice affiliated with a large health system, Rex Healthcare in his case. Then in the 2000s, again like many practices, he left the system and opened an independent practice, this time in Durham because of a non-compete clause. When the non-compete expired, he moved back to Wake County. Then tragedy hit the family. In 2003, he lost a daughter to lymphoma when she was 21. "This stuff now pales in comparison to that," Wilkins says. Wilkins has suffered a heart attack, had angioplasty and bypass surgeries, and suffered a stroke in 2010. He believes stress related to the exodus of doctors and patients from his practice was a major contributor. He spent Father's Day weekend following the stroke in the hospital. "That was just an awful time," he says. Old school maverick. Still, he has no intention of giving up. Now 65, he intends to practice medicine for another 5 to 10 years. "He's kind of like a pit bull," says Mark Fusco, a longtime patient of Wilkins Family Medicine. "Since seeing Wilkins on a regular basis, I've never been healthier," Fusco says. "They run the practice like you are a member of their family." While willing to try new strategies business-wise, Wilkins, the MD, is decidedly old school and has no intention of walking away from his patients. Still, after his health issues and litigation costs, would he wage a battle against Goliath again? "Yes, I would. And I tell you, this is not about me, this is about the patient population," he says. "I'm just an old school doctor, and I believe that the protection of private information is crucial to taking care of the patients. I feel embarrassed that anybody might have worked with me would feel any differently." And there's also a related article next to the cover story. It's headlined, "Dearth of Primary Care Doctors Fuels Signature Care Model." As the healthcare landscape continues its long and winding change, some doctors in the Triangle and throughout the nation are looking to switch up their business models. In an effort to capture patients who want more attention and are willing to pay extra, doctors are forming new practices to offer a concierge medicine option to patients. Under this model, the doctors prefer terms like executive primary care or signature care to the word concierge. Doctors view patients almost more like members. These member patients pay an annual fee of between $1,500 and $1,800 in most cases, but have better access to the doctors throughout the year, and the doctors give patients more attention. Some practices have capped membership at roughly $600 per doctor, well below the 4,000 or so patients that doctors in other primary care practices might have on their rosters. The shortage of primary care doctors has been well documented, and primary care doctors are now seeing as many as 30 patients per day. That leaves little time to focus on any one patient, something that led to a frustrating work environment. Outside the annual membership, the charge structure of these practices is very similar to that of traditional practices, with applicable co-pays or deductibles applying in the standard way. Some patients are eager to join, though others are turned off at the idea that they must pay an additional annual membership fee. MDVIP helps practice groups adopt the concierge model and is one of the largest companies in the nation pioneering this model. It touts a study published in 2012 in the American Journal of Managed Care that shows a steep reduction in hospitalizations for patients in these concierge practices, resulting in lower healthcare spending. The MDVIP model of personalized preventive care with smaller practices allows the physician to take a more proactive rather than a reactive approach, says Dr. Andrea Clemis, medical director of MDVIP. MDVIP-affiliated physicians have the time to focus on acute, chronic, and preventive health issues, and this increased physician contact time results in improved outcomes for patients and ultimately lower healthcare costs, she says. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The first headline, The Spirit of Local Liquors. Chapel Hill's Top of the Hill Distillery could create a niche market for local farmers as owner Scott Maitland continues to expand its out-of-state distribution. While buying goods touted as locally made is all the rage, Maitland says many of those products only include 25% locally sourced ingredients. He's made it a mission to use 100% locally sourced ingredients, and he's starting with local farmers. I'm networking with farmers to find local juniper berries for my gin, he says. I didn't know why I couldn't find any being grown here commercially, and the farmer said, we didn't know anybody wanted that. We can grow that for you. It's all experimental. Nobody has ever grown a commercial juniper berry crop in North Carolina. It takes a while to grow them, so that's a couple of years away from happening. Since December, TOPO Distillery has been distributing out of state as Top of the Hill. Maitland says TOPO products are sold in 8 states. He is waiting to hear back from 2 more on license approval and is in conversations with California. It's on Competing in the Kitchen. Dan Sacklad, owner of Whisk in Cary, provides a space that not only features kitchenware inventory, it also has a fully equipped and professionally organized culinary-grade kitchen in which a chef cooks with a different team every day. Whisk offers private or group cooking classes, and sometimes groups form teams and compete against each other. Usually, people don't know what to expect when they come in and they end up working together and eating and having a really great time, says Sacklad. We recently had a class with Red Hat, and there were 9 different countries represented. Sacklad founded his company a year ago and says he has surpassed his financial goals. Budget Director's Media-Friendly Family Friends. Raleigh banker Lee Roberts began his new job as Governor Pat McCrory's state budget director just days ago when Republican politician Art Pope stepped down. And while Roberts might not be the household name that his predecessor is in North Carolina politics, Roberts' family is a bit of a household name for those who keep up with Washington politics. His mother and father, Cokie Roberts and Steve Roberts, are both well-known journalists and political commentators in Washington, D.C. His sister, Rebecca, is a reporter for National Public Radio and XM Radio. Lee Roberts is actually the only one without his own Wikipedia page. Roberts' wife, Liza Roberts, comes from a career in journalism, now serving as editor and general manager of Raleigh's Walter magazine. As for the budget job, Roberts says he began conversations with the administration to let them know he was interested in serving if the opportunity came available. And it did. Texas, y'all, it's where Bailey's is headed. Raleigh jeweler Clyde Bailey and family are taking their first step beyond the East Coast in expansion of their jewelry market brand in partnership with Pandora. Bailey's Fine Jewelry will be opening a new Pandora-branded store in Killeen, Texas on September 8th and is making plans to open a store in Colorado Springs, Colorado by Christmas, says Trey Bailey, director of operations. Bailey's is a going global baby, he says, barely able to contain his excitement. Bailey's Fine Jewelry already owns and operates six Pandora-branded stores in some of North Carolina's biggest shopping malls. We've tried to be conservative, he says, but the Pandora is still selling like crazy. Former Governor Hunt, we have to value education. Triangle Business Journal hosted former Governor Jim Hunt at a breakfast event at NC State University recently. Here are some quotes. The real story of North Carolina's progress is higher education. That's why most of you are here today. How do you get economic growth? You don't get it by cutting taxes as far as you can. We ought to believe that every human being can be special. And now we turn to the reporter pages. First, we have the page for Amanda Hoyle, who covers commercial and residential real estate. Durham's Dilwig expands local footprint with $90 million buy. Portfolio includes office flex and industrial parcels. A Durham real estate investment and development firm, founded by Anthony Dilwig, has acquired a 12-building portfolio of office and flex building properties scattered around the triangle for $89.5 million. The Dilwig companies also acquired the buildings from another local real estate group, Beacon Partners, a real estate investment firm based in Charlotte and managed locally by Beacon partner Greg Sandruder. The portfolio includes the 122,311-square-foot Park 40 Plaza building in Durham, the 61,458-square-foot RDU Center 2, and the 114,518-square-foot RDU Center 3 buildings in Morrisville. In 2013, Dilwig made $120 million in office building acquisitions, mostly in Charlotte and in Atlanta. For 2014, Dilwig's goal is $200 million in acquisitions, with his recent deal in the Triangle taking the ball almost halfway to the goal line. Channel Advisor signs on for new headquarters in Morrisville. E-commerce software firm Channel Advisor has disclosed through a U.S. securities filing that it has signed a lease commitment to relocate and expand its headquarters in Morrisville to Duke Realty Corporation's Perimeter Park office park. Channel Advisor is currently based in a building in the nearby Aerial Center office park. By October 2015, it will be relocating to take 136,538 square feet of office space on the first, third, fourth, and fifth floors of a new building at 3025 Carrington Mill Boulevard. The building will be adjacent to Duke Realty's Perimeter 2 office building that was completed in June and the Perimeter 3 office building slated to open in September. Channel Advisor CEO Scott Wingo had hinted in March that the company would be needing to expand its operations in the Triangle and that it could build a new building to accommodate its growing staff. Channel Advisor employs more than 400 people in Morrisville. Under terms of the lease, Channel Advisor will pay $23.50 per square foot for the new office space, or $3.2 million for the first year of the initial seven-year lease contract. The deal so far ranks as one of the largest office deals of 2014 in the Triangle. Report: Raleigh offers great rates for space. The 2014 Experience Exchange Report by Building Owners and Managers Association, or BOMA, shows that among 250 metro markets surveyed in the U.S. and Canada, the Raleigh office building market ranks among the least expensive for total building operating expenses when ranked by cost per square foot. The five most expensive markets: New York, $11.77 per square foot; San Francisco, $10.09; District of Columbia, $9.63; Santa Monica, California, $9.62; and San Jose, California, $8.96. The five least expensive markets: $5.17 Raleigh, $5.39 Salt Lake City, $6.01 Orlando, $6.03 Dallas, and $6.08 Nashville. New Chick-fil-A and Krispy Kreme eateries coming to Raleigh-Durham. A deal to build a new Chick-fil-A restaurant and drive-thru at the Lake Boone Shopping Center in West Raleigh has been finalized, with plans to open the new location by spring 2015. A local franchisee has signed a lease to take over the former Wendy's fast food restaurant building that fronts the Food Lion-anchored shopping center near the intersection of Lake Boone Trail and Interstate 440. Durham has moved one step closer to getting its very own Krispy Kreme donut shop. A Winston-Salem company representing Krispy Kreme has finalized the acquisition of a vacant restaurant building at 3536 Hillsborough Road in Durham, according to county deed records, paying $825,000 for the nearly one-acre site. The building had been owned for many years by Raleigh restaurateur Lou Mashakis, who used to operate a Miami Sub sandwich shop from the building, and later George's Diner, which closed in early 2010. And now we turn to the reporter page for Jason DeBrun, who covers healthcare and biopharmaceuticals. The headline: BioCryst defaults on loan. Durham's BioCryst Pharmaceuticals defaulted on a loan, sending its stock down about 5% on September 1. BioCryst had expected the default to happen, so some of the fallout was already backed in the share price, which still closed at $12.86, near the 52-week high of $14.62, largely because BioCryst is developing a drug that could fight the Ebola virus. Specifically, BioCryst received $30,000 to monetize future royalty payments in connection to Rapiacta, a flu drug, in Japan. Called the Pharma Notes, BioCryst received a net of $22,691 at 14% annual interest due on September 1, every year through 2020. The royalty deal was with Shionogi, which licensed the rights to sell Rapiacta in Japan. It's common for a drug company to license drug rights to outside companies to sell in various countries around the world. The company that developed the drug receives royalty payments, while the company marketing and selling the drug receives the remainder of total sales. In this case, the royalties were not enough to cover the payments due on the pharma notes, and BioCryst defaulted. Consequently, BioCryst forfeits the right to future royalty payments from Shionogi. And in the He Said It section, the quote: having something closer to the customers was what we really wanted to do. Growing organically is always long and painful. This was much quicker. And that quote is from Jim Mullen, CEO of DPX Holdings, headquartered in Durham, and parent of Patheon Pharmaceuticals. After the acquisition of Gallus Biopharmaceuticals, Patheon contracts with pharmaceutical companies to manufacture their drugs, but didn't have facilities in the United States. The acquisition gave it manufacturing sites in St. Louis, Missouri, and Princeton, New Jersey. Venture capital scene improved during second quarter. The second quarter of this year was a big one for companies seeking venture capital. Nearly every sector and region saw increases, but two stood out, as they often do. The tech sector, and particularly Silicon Valley, continued to see the most interest from investment groups, while Research Triangle Park, captured in the Southeast category, saw a healthy percentage increase, but still lags far behind other geographic areas. The Money Tree Report is a collaboration of PricewaterhouseCoopers and the National Venture Capital Association based on data from Thomson Reuters. And in the investments by industry, here's a look at the top five industries during the second quarter. $6.1 billion, software, 47% of total. $1.8 billion, biotechnology, 14% of total. $1 billion, media and entertainment, 8% of total. $747 million, IT services, 6% of total. $718 million, industrial, energy, 6% of total. And now we have the reporter page for Dawn Curry, who covers small business, personalities, and triangle trends. The first headline, Strata nears $1 billion in solar investments, Chapel Hill firm bringing in new farm every 10 days. Chapel Hill-based Strata Solar brings a new solar farm online every 10 days, and at this rate, the solar photovoltaic company will have 80 farms up and running by the end of the year. The most recent farms are in Laurinburg, Clarkton, and Springhope, part of a $100 million investment led by National Cooperative Bank and Washington, D.C.-based Sol Systems. Strata Solar is approaching $1 billion in solar investments in the state, says John Morrison, Strata Solar's Senior Vice President of Public Affairs and Asset Management. Morrison says the majority of the company's solar farms are in rural areas in the state. These farms increase the tax base in these low-wealth counties in which the farms are built, he says, adding that jobs are created, are structured to be maintained. We work with a construction staffing firm to provide construction staff. Once we've trained an individual, we tend to use them on multiple farms. We generally try to keep them close to home as we have farms all over the state. What we're able to do, because we cluster projects, is once they are trained, they can have a pretty sustained career in solar. The Spring Hope Farm, Strata Solar's 65th farm to come online, directly supported 80 jobs, and the company spent $200,000 in direct expenditures in Nash County for wages, lodging, and supplies. The farm itself can power 615 homes, reducing carbon dioxide by 4,269 tons. Sisters seek crowdfunding for art gallery. Two Cary artists are hoping a Kickstarter campaign can help them turn their art gallery into a cafe. Amanda Almazan and Ashley Ferries are twins from Durham who have been running an art gallery in Cary for the past 2 years called Lucky Pie. The gallery features art made by the sisters, who also sells art from other artists in the community. When the shop first opened 2 years ago, Almazan and Ferries had 10 other artists on board. Today, the shop features around 60 artists. The focus is on art made from repurposed materials, reclaiming so they can have a new life. The art in the store includes paintings, sculptures, metalwork, glass, jewelry, and even handcrafted soaps, to name a few. The sisters are hoping their Kickstarter campaign raises $24,000. It has so far raised $440 with 55 days to go. When our project is successfully funded, we will be able to extend the gallery to include local producers of consumable goods, including coffee roasters, cheesemakers, and wineries, and locally grown farm-fresh foods, says the Kickstarter page. The concept, the sisters explain, is about creating a space where the art community of Cary can come together in a broader scope, which could include live music or spoken poetry. EPA says North Carolina now meets national air quality standards. Haze, respiratory conditions, aggravated heart and lung disease were among the issues high ozone levels of high ozone were among of the issues high ozone levels and particle pollution contributed to. In 2012, the EPA lowered the annual standard from 15 micrograms to 12 micrograms per cubic meter, and the State Division of Air Quality's air monitoring has not exceeded the standard, according to the North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources. And now we turn to the reporter page of Lauren Onosorge, who covers technology and entrepreneurship. The first headline, "Dude, I raised the money for my shop. Marine veteran gets White House crowdfunding nod for his coffee biz." Matt Victoriano, the veteran turned bar owner at Durham's Intrepid Life Coffee and Spirits, got what some might consider a huge honor last week from the White House. The former Marine Corps sergeant was named a White House champion of change. But those were just words, he told us before the event. "I've done stuff like this before," he says. "Go up to D.C. and talk about yourself, shake a bunch of hands. That's not what they want us to say. They want us to say, this is great, but dude, I'm going out of business." His shop, which he started in January, had great traffic in the spring, he says, but revenue slumped over the summer. Last week, he said, if he doesn't raise $27,000 via Indiegogo campaign, he says he'll close the doors permanently by September 7. But by September 2nd, his campaign had raised more than $28,000. "I wanted to be able to help out veterans and be involved in the community," he says, adding that the coffee shop bar seemed like a perfect venue. Victoriano had an opportunity to air his grievances, microphone in hand, at the White House event, but at the last minute, he changed his mind. "Once I got there, with the focus being on the veterans and how businesses really need to help them out, I thought it would be more beneficial to talk about the ways that the businesses helped out veterans," he says. Victoriano says that he'll take what he learned to heart. "It's given me other options to think about and try to work on in the future, regardless of how the coffee shop does," he says. He's currently looking for a new location. And in a related section, more advice. Victoriano gets advice from big-time investors. Victoriano got a lot of advice at the White House. In attendance were three of ABC's Shark Tank investors, and they had a lot to say about investment outside of Silicon Valley. The gist? If your product is good, investment will follow, even if you're in outlier metros such as Raleigh and Durham. And there are a couple of quotes. "Today is the best time in history to start a business. Everybody in this room has access to the same computing power as a Fortune 500 company." Robert Herjavec, Shark Tank panelist. "Successful entrepreneurs are always able to articulate, either the man or the woman or the team, for the investors, their idea in a minute or less." Kevin O'Leary, Shark Tank panelist. Wilmington tech firm Next Glass moves headquarters to Raleigh. Next Glass, a Wilmington tech startup currently pouring through tens of thousands of bottles of wine, has a new downtown headquarters. The firm has moved into an 11,000-square-foot building on Front Street that's owned by James Goodnight, the son of SaaS CEO Jim Goodnight. Goodnight is working with the firm on the construction, says George Taylor, company chairman. "It's a fairly open floor plan," he says, adding that it won't be a typical headquarters. The reception area, there's a bar and a game room. Next Glass, which is taking the top two floors of the building, is creating what CEO Kurt Taylor likes to call DNA profiles for hundreds of wines and beers. And that means, well, thousands of bottles in their building. George Taylor says the team goes through about 1,000 bottles per week, and since they need such a minute amount to analyze from each bottle, that's a lot of extra booze. "It sounds like it would be so easy to give away, but I don't have that many friends," George Taylor laughs. The company isn't just planning a party, it's developing an app that can help you make a wine selection. On-staff chemists analyze about 10 milliliters of each bottle for everything from texture to taste. The goal is to, based on your personal likes, recommend wines you should try. And it has big-name backers, such as new board member and former Harris Teeter CEO Thomas Dixon. The app is free to consumers. The public release will be late September. And in a Did You Know section, the Startup Factory has chosen its latest class of entrepreneurs. TSF runs a 3-month program in Durham for early stage companies. I Am Next, an Oklahoma startup developing a mobile app that focuses on the demand for home services such as HVAC and plumbing. Orate, a Washington, D.C.-based startup creating a marketplace for event organizers and public speakers to find one another. Antenna, RTP-based Antenna is developing a feedback platform to allow site visitors to react to anything that grabs their attention. Snap Yeti, a Raleigh-based photo contest platform that lets brands connect with patrons through crowdsourced photos. And Spoken Thought, a New York City-based startup, aims to connect digital out-of-home media with highly targeted mobile audiences. And in the He Said It section, the quote, "We started in November with just the Plows app. We had an incredible winter to deal with. We're scaling nationwide right now, and we're looking at any viable city that has a nice suburban sprawl." That quote is from Wills Mahoney. Mahoney recently expanded his New York startup Plows and Mows to Raleigh. Mahoney will focus his Mows enterprise in the Raleigh area. Mows is an app that connects people to lawn mowing and leaf removal service. And one more article. Building a research village. RTP CEO Giolis backs away from an iconic building concept. Bob Giolis, CEO of the Research Triangle Foundation, tells me what he sees tying the new RTP together. A convergence center. The first time we spoke, it was intended as a landmark to serve as the icon you think of when you think of RTP. It continues to evolve. We see it being much more of a district within Park Center instead of just a singular opportunity. It's certainly about the coming together of the public sector and the private sector, which has been a hallmark of our region, but it's also about the convergence of science and art and humanities, all sciences coming together. The idea continues to evolve. We've got a 100-acre site, which is Park Center. We have a larger district vision that will be 300 acres plus, but within that first 100 acres within the Park Center property is the idea that we will have a place where we can call it a convergence center. We had thought about that as being a singular, standalone facility, but now we see it as much more of a district opportunity, a variety of places and spaces within Park Center. It opens it up and provides a way in which many more people can get involved with it. And the executive voice column focuses on Laura Helms Reese in this edition of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Building a Business with a Cause. Helms Reese's unique management style drives this contract research group." And this article, this question and answer, is written by Dawn Curry. Lauren Helms Reese crafts a different style of leadership for ROE, the contract research organization based in Chapel Hill, which she took over from her parents, the founders. She believes being a scientist helped her mold that leadership style. While she never dreamed she'd take over the company, "I always just thought of it as something my parents did in the basement," she jokes. She says the fact that she and her brother are scientists affords them more experimental outlooks on running the company. ROE, founded in 1984, provides medical research for pharmaceuticals and assists clients in submitting trial drugs to the Federal Drug Administration for approval. Today, the company employs over 350 people. Helms Reese, a mother of two, isn't your average businesswoman. Her corner office is equipped with a treadmill desk, one of several around the company. Why is having a unique workplace culture important? The business world is changing so much, staying ahead of it is important. Most people leave in 3 years among our competitors. We need them longer. We assemble a team of people that like working together. These clinical trials can take up to 3 years sometimes. It's important that our client is dealing with the same people during that time. Trust is important to us. What are some experimental things you've done to adjust workplace culture? Google had a program where an employee could spend 20% of their time on whatever they wanted. We did a pilot test and modified it 3 times. It doesn't work here. It works for Google. We found people couldn't put down their work, and people who wanted to work on other things found the time. How do you handle having 2 children and being CEO? I can't do my job without the support of my partner. A lot of places think it's just moms who need flexibility. We are a predominantly female company. We provide flexibility and parental benefits to everyone in the company. Everyone has someone they are taking care of. What is your passion? I love building businesses. I really enjoy the culture and creating jobs that make a difference. I want to make sure the jobs are secure for the employees and that we treat clients with respect. What's been the hardest thing for you to accomplish? Finishing up my doctorate. I'm really good at statistics, but I don't love statistics. Some companies in your industry see an advantage to going public. Is that something you would consider? We think staying private is a huge advantage. We can make long-term decisions. Public companies struggle to make long-term decisions. What do you wish you had more of? I wish we had more access to patients. It's rare we get to see how our work is impacting people. What does a bad day at Roe look like? When something goes wrong, the product doesn't work, and there's been a mistake. It's a hard call to make. I've only met a couple of people not doing their best to do right. When we find someone doing something wrong, it can look like they're just being lazy, but it's usually fraud. It's rare, but when it does happen, it's not cheap. The bigger risk is to the patients. We have all these steps in place to make sure the patient is safe. What advice would you give other women who want to devote themselves both to motherhood and to an executive position? Get your support network together. Pick your partner wisely. This isn't possible without a dependable partner. And don't worry about screwing up. And now we turn to the small business legal focus section of the Triangle Business Journal, to a column written by Jim Verdonik, who is an attorney with Ward & Smith, PA in Raleigh. The headline, "In most cases, it's not what you know, but who you know. Start looking at your people, relationships, as potential biz assets." One of my partners, I'll call him Sam because that's his name, has a sign that reads, "Good lawyers know the law. Great lawyers know the judge." Relationships are your business's most important assets: customers, partners, vendors, employees, and referral sources. Who you know is as important as what you know. That's why many C students own businesses that A students work in. They rise to the top by dedicating their lives to knowing people. Maybe they were C students because they spent more time in school getting to know people than in the library. Of course, the best and brightest do both, but many people start making choices early in life. We all know children who are people-focused and those who aren't. But what does knowing someone really mean? How do you translate knowing people into business success? Is it a numbers game? Do you know the type of relationship you have with the people? If you don't know the type of relationship, it can't be a valuable business asset. Let's start exploring these questions with an easy example. Your digital friends. Do you really know people on LinkedIn or Facebook? How much does knowing lots of people superficially matter? How many digital friends would do something if you ask? How many would do something for you without you asking? Do they know enough about you to know what would be useful to you? Of course, valuable relationships are two-way streets. Would you do something for them other than click a button? Do they know you would? Now let's assume you know someone and they know you. Is that all there is to business success? Probably not. You have to be able to use who and what you know about them to create desired outcomes. Combining who and what you know often separates successful people from losers in business. Now let's go back to my partner who knows the judge. If you thought that was an allusion to a corrupt legal system where judges grant favors and ignore justice, you have a lot to learn. The real power of knowing the judge is that you learn how the judge thinks. Most judges try to achieve justice as they interpret it, but the first step to convincing anyone, including judges, to give you what you want is to know how they think and build your campaign on that knowledge to avoid their hot-button issues that automatically doom your cause, say the right thing at the right time that causes people to assume you are brilliant, and start filling in the blanks in positive ways. It doesn't matter whether it's a judge, a customer, or your boss. The more you know about them, the more likely you'll be able to turn your connection into an asset that helps you achieve your goals. So stop counting your digital connections and get to know people. Asking questions is your best tool. Engaging in a monologue about yourself just shows how self-centered you are. Give just enough information about yourself to engage others. Effective selling starts by getting to know people's goals and how they think. Then use your knowledge to persuade. And now we turn to a page called The List in the Triangle Business Journal. And the first section is By the Numbers, Girl Power. In North Carolina, women own 267,800 firms and employ 268,300 people. According to a new report from American Express, Open, which ranks the state third in the growth of women-owned firms over the last 17 years. The number of women-owned businesses has increased 68% since 1997, the report says. While women-owned businesses in 2007 generated $32 million in sales, a figure that grew to $35.9 million in 2014, below are a few highlights from Open State of Women-Owned Business Report 2015 by American Express. 1,200. The estimated number of new businesses per day started by women in the past year. That's up from an average of 740 per day the year prior. 0.4. 4 out of 10 new firms are now started by women. 9.1 million, the estimated number of women-owned businesses in the U.S. currently. $1.4 trillion, the amount of revenue that those businesses generate. 7.9 million, the number of people employed by those firms. 2.9 million, the number of firms owned by women of color nationwide. Number 10, Raleigh's rank on American City Business Journal's BizWoman ranking of the best cities for women in business report was from July 31, 2014. And now we turn to the People on the Move section in the Triangle Business Journal, where the spotlight is on Bimal Shah, CEO, Person Memorial Hospital. A hospital operations veteran with experience at various community hospitals in Florida and Georgia, Bimal Shah has been tapped as Person Memorial Hospital's new CEO. Shah sums up his new responsibilities like this: "My primary responsibility is to help create the spirit of the organization, the spirit that encourages innovation, ensures high performance, enhances stakeholder engagement, drives patient satisfaction, and consistently delivers the highest quality of care to our communities." Person Memorial, a Duke LifePoint hospital, is a 110-bed full-service hospital located in the Person County town of Roxborough. It currently employs a total of 333. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? Person Memorial Hospital strives daily to deliver the highest quality of care to the Person community and surrounding counties, a feat that is accomplished solely through the hard work of our employees, medical staff, and volunteers. However, unique to healthcare and hospitals is the diversity of roles that collaborate to deliver quality care. What are some of your major goals in this position? "My primary goal is to ensure that Person Memorial Hospital is a place where employees want to work," where physicians want to practice, and where patients choose to come for health care. Ensuring that we are internally creating a culture and spirit that is consistent with these goals is the key to our success. Biggest pet peeve. Throughout my career, my greatest pet peeve has been witnessing acts of disrespect toward and between individuals. Biggest worry. My biggest worry is ensuring that our employees, medical staff, and volunteers all have the tools necessary to do their jobs to the best of their ability. With the evolving healthcare landscape, this becomes increasingly challenging, but something that we are unequivocally committed to. Personal, married to Sonal Shah. Last book read, The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch. And now we turn to the viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal. And in this edition, the Washington Notebook is on the viewpoint page. And it's written by Kent Hoover, who heads up the Triangle Business Journal's Washington Bureau. The headline, Construction Spending Buoys Overall Economy. Construction spending reached its highest level since 2008 in July, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, and industry economists think the party is just getting started. Spending on both private and public construction increased in July, reaching a seasonally adjusted annual rate of $981.3 billion. That's more than 8% higher than last July's rate. The report provides further evidence that a vigorous non-residential construction recovery is finally at hand, said Anirban Basu, chief economist for Associated Builders and Contractors. Increased job growth, booming energy production, expanding industrial production, and normalizing capital markets are all contributing to non-residential construction's renewed momentum and confidence among developers and other significant consumers of construction services is high, signaling ongoing recovery. Ken Simonson, chief economist for the Associated General Contractors of America, said private non-residential construction should remain strong through the rest of 2014 and beyond, while residential spending is likely to keep growing, though at a more moderate pace. Simonson's one cautionary note, funding is still inadequate for needed public infrastructure improvements. Wall Street is doing its part to fuel construction spending, with recent rallies in both the stock and bond markets, Basu said. That has, quote, helped to generate wealth and lower borrowing costs simultaneously, an ideal situation for construction, he said. The domestic energy boom is creating lots of work for construction companies. Spending on power construction, which includes oil and gas fields, pipelines, and electric utilities, is up 29% compared with a year ago, Simonson noted. Manufacturing construction is up 25%, and office construction is up 20%. Construction is down compared with a year ago in healthcare, education, and communications. And staying on the viewpoint page, we have the guest opinion. And the guest opinion is written by Bob Luddy, who is the president of Raleigh-based Captive Air Systems. The headline, Don't Let EPA Derail North Carolina Jobs Gains. North Carolina's long, arduous recovery from the Great Recession finally took hold late last year as we witnessed a strong bounce back in the jobs picture. Our overall employment growth is outpacing the nation, and North Carolina's industries are showing gains across the board. There is a great sense of optimism among workers and business owners in the air, finally, after so many years of cutbacks, caution, and retrenchment. That is good news. Now, regrettably, we face new, wholly unnecessary hurdles from Washington that threaten to undo all the good we have done. The Environmental Protection Agency is contemplating a major tightening of air pollution standards for ground-level ozone. The effects of this new regulatory shift, which could be imposed later this year, would likely go down as the most expensive regulation in the nation's history. Its effect on the North Carolina jobs market and the state's economic growth would be devastating. The state's counties most impacted by the new EPA regulations are home to more than 600,000 jobs in manufacturing, natural resources, and construction. those counties and the rest of our state and nation would all be hammered by this new proposal. In 2008, federal regulators set the standard for ground-level ozone, the main component of smog, at 75 parts per billion. That, according to a recent federal court ruling, protects public health. Now, even before states put the new standard in place, the EPA is expected to ratchet down the standard to as low as 60 parts per billion. In 2010, the EPA calculated that this lower standard will cost the economy $90 billion by 2020. That looks like a gross underestimate. A new study by the National Association of Manufacturers and NERA, Economic Consulting, estimates that the sharp reduction in ozone standards put forward by the EPA would reduce national economic output by $270 billion annually and $3.4 trillion between 2017 and 2040. It would put millions of jobs at risk and drive up the cost of energy for consumers and manufacturers. In North Carolina alone, compliance costs could reach nearly $100 billion. Now, few would question the need to protect the environmental quality of our air, water, and land. The real question is how effective and costly massive new regulations would pose to the economy. We have to weigh these effects in the balance. Incredibly, the EPA is moving to impose the tighter ozone standards with little insight as to how exactly manufacturers and other businesses will accomplish the lower benchmark. Washington has identified only 23% of controls that would move businesses to the tighter standard. But we can make a reasonable prediction that the measures that are mandated will result in factory shutdowns, scrappage of manufacturing lines, equipment, and commercial vehicles. And we'll have to stop there with that guest opinion as we have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.